from our model could help it completely transition and change other areas of the business and the way we look at the things we do today within the retail space. It's not just looking at the products on the shelf, but it's looking at the way in which you run a business. If we could give you real-time data and insights, you wouldn't have to look at things in a relay. You could look at optimizing your product shelf at any moment in time in any area.
Hello there, this is Milena, and welcome to another episode of Retail Mavericks Podcast, your go-to podcast for the latest in retail industry trends, covering everything from AI and technology to culture and innovation. Our guest today is the lead design manager here at Hivory, Penelope Murdoch. Penelope started her career in fashion design as a stylist and then moved to creating internal brands, driving end-to-end process from concept design to designing prints, fabrics, and shapes, to doing the testing and fittings, and then going all the way through to photo shoots. Thinking about the impact mass market could create on the environment, Penelope transitioned to digital space roughly 8 years ago. So without any further ado, we'll kick this episode off with Penelope discussing the transition from fashion design to digital space and the similarities and differences she found between the two.
It was interesting to find something similar. I actually spoke to a few people who had also made the transition, and I didn't realize the similarities between the fashion design process and the user experience design process. But when you think about it and you apply the principles of design thinking, it's quite similar and you have a very similar process. So you go through research where you define, you know, who your customer is and who your user is, what are their needs, what are their buying habits. Then you go into ideation where you're brainstorming solutions to a problem, similar, you're looking for inspiration for your next collection. You do storyboards within sort of the UX space, and you do mood boards within the fashion space. And then you move into that sort of design development where you're wireframing within the UX space, and then technical sketching within the design space, prototyping, as well as sample development. And then you do your UX testing, which is similar to then your fitting and buyer feedback. So throughout the process, it's quite similar when you're going through that initial stage. Then when you move into delivery, it's a similar sort of thing. You're delivering a final product solution, similar, you're delivering a final garment, you're gathering customer feedback, and then you're making improvements either on your next product release or feature release or your next season and collection. So there are a lot of parallels that crossed over through the process, and ultimately you're designing for people. So you're still using the same principles or thought process of human-centered design. There is a human at the core of your product, regardless of what it is. I think where it really differed for me was the upskill within the technology space, and always will. Like, you have to really be on the ball of what is that new piece of technology that's coming out, what's now possible that wasn't possible before. The difference there is in the fashion industry has been very slow to progress with technology. Like, we have smart fabrics that can adapt to heat temperature now, but it's been a slow process, whereas the technology in digital space is much quicker and evolving now on the day, almost, on what you could do yesterday and what you could do today. So from that side, I've had to be very much on the ball, but I have a real love of learning, and it's a fantastic space to be in because each day can be different in what you're able to achieve.
That's a very interesting comparison. Listening to you, I could draw on my experience in product development as well, and it sounds like a very similar framework. Do you think that perhaps you can dive a little bit deeper in one of the components that would be more applicable to one of the products that you helped design at Hivory, and compare how maybe that was similar or different in fashion design?
Hivory is probably sitting on the more of a technical product in the fact that it is in the AI space. So I would say we're further from the fashion industry in that sense, that we're actually looking more complex modeling behind what we're actually presenting to customers. But I guess if you were to really look at the process and how it parallels, is You know, here we're really looking to explore who's our new customer, how are we defining more to them, how are we transitioning away from being more of a consulting service into a SaaS platform and getting to understand them. And that's very similar, that process of who's our next market if you're growing your collection or your market within the industry. Who are you targeting? Who do we need to know that we need to go and understand better? And then that next bit would very much be like, what is it that we're answering? What is it that they're asking for? And how are we pushing that market? So for us here at Hivory, we really want to know is like, what is that thing that we could look to transition and push ourselves in? You know, is there a new market gap that we can go and explore? So I guess in that, if you're looking in that growth area, particularly in the fashion industry, you're always looking to bring in more customers. You want to grow your market and grow your footprint. And that for us at Hivory is very important as well. We want to really make sure we're expanding our target market, who we're looking to help and support with the technology we have. So I think that in that space, there are similarities in making sure you're targeting a new market and finding a new market and that research behind that.
Can you point out maybe three most important learnings that you have acquired through your experience in fashion design as well as digital space that then you were able to apply when you went more into AI space?
I don't know if I've nailed it down into three, but I can talk to some of the key learnings throughout my career. So coming from a consulting background, I got a lot of exposure to different types of areas. So from financial, government, private sector, e-commerce. But I would say I very much started my career in the UI space, so user interface and designing apps and websites and payment terminals. But what I quickly learned is when you go into a company and you're doing digital transformation, they're very excited or laser focused on wanting a slick new app or delivering something new and flashy. But regardless of what they want, you'd always have to bring back to what is the overall big picture? What is the service piece that you're delivering, and how do all the products and pieces of your business fit together? So I think the big takeaway within fashion design, within, you know, web app design, and also within the AI space is to really think about what's the big picture? How does it all fit together? And what is the need that you're trying to solve? So what is the customer's involvement in that and ensuring that you're answering that need first? Because regardless of what you're actually building or what you're developing as a product, if it's not going to fit into the service offering, if it's not a great experience, and if it's not answering those needs, it's not going to work. That's the core fundamental. And to be mindful on both sides, like in fashion, it can often be, oh, we love this great print, but no one wants to buy it. Or, oh, we like this new technology, but it's the wrong thing for the user. So for me, it's really making sure you're taking a holistic approach to what it is you're trying to do, understanding the user's needs, and making sure that you're answering those and it all fits together in a seamless experience. More often than not, I've seen products in companies overlap each other and basically counteract what the other's doing. So ensuring that that basic picture and puzzle fit together nicely.
Well, you spoke earlier about the similarities between design in fashion as well as digital space and then AI products. Can you maybe discuss more what the differences were when you were transitioning from designing digital products to now Hivory products from design, capability, interface, and customer service standpoints? And I can remind you of these, so you can just go one by one.
It's quite different because when we're designing digital experiences, we're looking at the user and the user's need and chatting with them and getting feedback. With AI, you're functioning around a need, but you're using data to support it. Data often is conflicting to what the user thinks and feels. The biggest thing that I had to understand and learn is the importance of the data that you're using within AI. So ensuring that it's not creating a bias. I think the way, not to oversimplify it, but the way to think about it for me is that saying is you are what you eat. So we might have the best AI model, but if we're feeding in messy data, the outcome can be terrible. And if that's exposed to the users too earlier at the wrong time, it can undermine all your great work. That is a completely different area when you're thinking about designing products is that you're actually having to think about what you're feeding into your product and how that information is translated and fed out to the user. And you can't always control that because you're not designing and feeding the data. It's just the data is what it is. So it's actually quite a different shift because it's hard to control. And when we're talking about designing experiences, when there's an element that you can't control, it's a bit risky. So that for me is probably the biggest difference is you're not always 100% sure what that output's going to be or what that insight might be. When you're working with AI, you can have a great model, but the data that you're feeding in and what your output might be is the real challenge there. What we're also doing as a bit of a mindset shift here at Hiver is that design itself comes, and within digital design, a whole bunch of different elements. So you've got the user interface space, then you've got experience design. So user interface very much being the actual screens, the experience around the screen. So not just the flow through each screen, but actually what brings a customer to that touch point. And then you're looking at the research that goes into that. So understanding the customer, what are their needs, ensuring you're answering those, making sure you really define the journey well. And then service design, which is that bigger piece of, you know, what is the end-to-end service experience? How does someone get help within your platform? How did they come to that? Who have they interacted in? Is there a sales team that supports them? Everything that surrounds each digital point is part of that service design as well. So I think what we're really trying to do here at Hiver is take that holistic approach, making sure we're really getting the breadth of design to support our customers and experience, and then incorporating that AI to automate certain areas and new emerging technologies within that. So I think we're very fortunate that we've got access to all of that knowledge. We've got amazing teams here and subject matter experts and our founders who come with a wealth of knowledge to call on. I think that that's what's exciting. I'm excited for the next year here at Hiver with design as we really look at our service offering end to end, our product experience and the levels we get to go to, everything right down to those interactions on our platform within the actual SaaS platform that we're building to our interactions between our customer service team and our consultants that do an amazing job today and continuing to bring that into the future.
In terms of adapting to user needs, during your experience of designing products at Hiver, what was one of the user needs that you and your team had to adapt the product for?
Yeah, I think this probably talks to our transition space we're in right now. And the challenge we currently face is moving us from a consulting service into a SaaS service. And it's a different mindset because as a consultant, you want to be able to answer everything for the customer and you're there to help and support them and you're hand-holding. As a SaaS product, you want to be holding the hand as little as possible and getting them to self-service. And that in itself is a real shift for the way you look at your customer, but also the way your product serves them. So we need to uplift our product to be very self-service and extremely easy to use, understanding that the technology that we're working with is quite complex. There's amazing algorithms that the team have built behind what we deliver, but we need that to be extremely usable. And so I'd say right now we're in that transition period of, you know, almost level setting at the experience for our customers and future customers, and revisiting that and going, okay, right, we really need to put this through the lens of someone who does not understand how this all works and can land and just drive their way through it seamlessly. So there's a few things we've needed to do and reflect over the last year, but we started by really establishing the foundations of design as a practice here at Hiver. So ensuring we take a step back and look at the space when we're working in, who we're targeting, why we're targeting, and then what is that transition from very much being a product that serves analytical consultant to serve a customer, and we're removing that and going, what are we to be a product that serves the customer and then our consultants support and add that X factor, that plus factor to that service. it is taking that high level view that I mentioned earlier. It's very much going, okay, what is the service that we're currently offering? What's the experience? Where does our product sit in? And what are the parts that we love and we want to keep? And what are the parts that aren't working so well that we need to understand, break down, and sort of redesign that experience to make it easier? Which parts can we automate and which parts do we keep? And so that's what's quite exciting. So the path forward for us is really working with our analytical consultants, working with our customers, and defining that experience end to end, and then iterating and improving that as we go.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because obviously the consultant and then the end user will have very different knowledge when it comes to using the platform. So I imagine that there are actually quite a lot of changes that need to be made. When it comes to automating some of the tools within the platform, maybe just give one example, one of the changes that you and your team had to make.
One of the pain points that is quite challenging is when we're looking to support our customers through a relay, there are quite a few constraints that we need to factor into our model and our optimizing of the assortment list. So, you know, for instance, we call them rules within the product that we manually enter in to support the output of that optimized assortment list. For us, there are just so many variables and rules that we know that would be quite challenging to ask an external user to come in and try and understand on the platform. So we're needing to rethink how that experience works and try and break those down into actual business questions. So rather than it being, you know, the shelf height has to be like this, it might be a better experience if the customer said all stores have a shelf height of X, or all products are this measurement. And therefore, the model itself can understand that from more of a business question perspective and take it through into the actual output. So it's that transition of going, what is right now quite a complicated calculator that has to have all these rules and constraints, and looking at going, what are targets? What are hard constraints? And how can we group those into business questions that a user can ask the platform? It's quite a big transition as an experience from both the front end and the back end to make what are basically questions today into a usable output tomorrow. I guess when you're looking at a SaaS platform, there's some consistencies that you need to have. And some of those are, you know, what's that onboarding experience, understanding what the customer is trying to achieve and making sure you're tailoring through to the right area of the platform to enable them to have the right tools to support what they need. Ensuring that they have early insights or early information so they don't have to, you know, go down a long journey or path within the platform before they actually get helpful use of it. So there's a few things that are consistent, and that is just having an easy landing page to welcome them with useful tips and insights up front, sharing access. A lot of SaaS platforms, you're working with a team, so making sure that your team has the same access you do, that they're alerted to the right information or prompts at the right time. So you'll have a notifications hub, you'll have account management area, you usually have a dashboard of some kind and a guided onboarding flow. The other sort of things to think about is how you welcome or enable a customer into a SaaS platform, depending on what type of platform it is. Ensuring that there's someone to support you. And if there are advanced things you need to do that are outside your realm, you know, we know that a lot of our customers have quite complex needs that we need to factor to that our consultants support. So making sure we're not taking that away and that the help is there and available to them whenever they need it. And whether that's just simple how to use the tool if something's not clear, and having training and frequently asked questions, or actually someone that they can call in and get support to do two more complicated cases or work for them.
This is a great answer. I can definitely visualize how much work is involved in making that transition. So when it comes to development opportunities, this is one of them. You also mentioned earlier that one of the things that most designers or product developers seek throughout the process is expanding their reach and their audience. So you said that there are a few gaps in the market that Hiver is looking to fill. What development opportunities you see in that regard in the next year or two?
This one for me is what really excites me about Hivery is the opportunity space here for us is amazing. And where we stand today and who we are looking at today is probably quite small for where we could be tomorrow. What we're able to do with the algorithms we have and the technology we have is wider than the market that we're looking at today, which is what is so exciting. I would say some of the insights we can get from our model could help it completely transition and change other areas of the business and the way we look at the things we do today within the retail space. It's not just looking at the products on the shelf, but it's looking at the way in which you run a business. If we could give you real-time data and insights, you wouldn't have to look at things in a relay. You could look at optimizing your product shelf at any moment in time in any area. We could open into different areas of business. We could open into, you know, sales. We could marketing, wastage even. The possibilities are huge. So I think right now we're very much looking at a small part, but we'll start to really open up different doors and windows as we get this platform up and running.
I remember you mentioning that as a part of your transition process, you did a course at MIT to familiarize yourself with some of the terminology, the automation possibilities, and also best practices when it comes to AI space. Can you maybe share some practical tips that you have learned?
Be mindful of your audience and what their expectations are. You know, I think for a lot of people, the whole concept of AI is exciting but also scary. So you need to take them on the journey. So ensure that your users, one, very much aware that their data might be captured and used, where the data is coming from. So being transparent about what is being fed into the AI model, that it is a machine learning model within the AI space. And what was new to me is understanding that there's different types of models to be used in different areas, whether that's utilizing images and it's a learning model of imagery, or whether it's actually just a simple decision tree that is not generative AI, it's actually just done by humans to put that together. So I think there's a few things that are fundamental for the experience side of that, and that is one, being very transparent to your user and ensuring they understand what is the information that they're seeing, where that comes from, and bringing them along for that journey. And then the other is the different types of possibilities there. I mean, we know that AI can be wrong at this point, and being open and honest about that, you know, we might not always hit the nail on the head first time, and that it is learning as it goes. So I think it's just the biggest one for me was making sure you're transparent with your customer or user when you are using an AI model to support your delivery of your product.
One of the things I've also noticed when I was looking at your resume is that you were a guest lecturer at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, and your focus was to help students understand how to practically embed innovation principles within an organization. It would be great to hear how one of the design principles that you use, how they can apply it in real life.
Yes, as you mentioned there, the aim of that course was to help teach already existing businesses how to create an innovation hub or embed innovation within an organization. And part of that was really recognizing the importance of building strong relationships, finding a gap in the market, testing early and cheap, which is a big one. So you don't want to spend a lot of money when you're trying out new ideas, because particularly in an established business, costs or money can be dedicated to different areas, and you want to make sure that what you're investing in, particularly if it's an innovation piece, has legs. So as early and as cheaply you can test, the better. And sometimes that's just with guerrilla testing or testing within the office. And then the other big one is not to follow the mass market or a saturated market. So if everyone's doing it, is that the best option for you? Or is there a gap? Blue ocean, red ocean strategy. So red ocean being very saturated market, and blue being that, you know, open market where you can go and see that there's a gap that no one's looking at and can you get there quickly. For us here at Hivory, I think we've got a huge opportunity here and a great mindset by the team to establish that is, you know, we know that we're pushing the edge of this technology and the market. If we can stay ahead of that, can we keep that up? And also looking for those opportunities that no one's thinking about yet and grabbing hold of them and going for it at the right time. So for us, I think, and what I really love about Hivory is everyone's excited for that and we've really got that opportunity here. I think we're ahead of the market and I think we've got great opportunity to continue to be and a great approach to explore opportunities within the market as well.
Thank you for listening until the end of this podcast. 25 of the top 50 suppliers in North America are using Hivory Curate right now to leverage store-level insights and fine-tune the assortment space menu to align with what and how shoppers want to buy. If you are interested in learning more, simply navigate to hivory.com/curate and request a demo. Hope you enjoy this podcast. Until the next time, everyone.